former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Really fun first hour in the books here on Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM. We're back. A lot to get to in hour two. We'll talk Michael's season-long predictions, AFC South, AFC West. We'll get Aaron Moore on, VSiN.com writer, to talk some college football and the Sun Belt Conference in particular. A lot of news and notes to talk about as we welcome you back. Michael's here. I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy. Stormy and Chris on the honeymoon. Congrats to the newlyweds as well. So I'll be in all week, excited for that. We want to start, though, with what is on Michael's mind here in hour number two, Michael. And, it's one of those things. For whatever reason, whenever you and I have been together over the last few months, it always seems like there's something new coming out of James Harden's mouth in Philadelphia. Yeah.
Well, there's always something coming out of Philadelphia.
I mean,
the incompetence, you can't match the incompetence that has gone on in that Philadelphia 76er building office. And this isn't just a fender bender. This has been a pattern of horrendous decisions going back. And Stephanie was kind enough to indulge me today. At the end of the show, our last hour, I'll have the five worst 76er trades in NFL and NBA history of their franchise. That doesn't even go into, I didn't even include their draft day trades that were a disaster, nor did I include their draft picks, which were a disaster. Like, there's three elements of this. But what's on my mind today is Harden made the announcement. By the way, you know, look, I'm not in any kind of great shape either, but Harden looked like he hasn't worked out at all this offseason. I don't know if you saw the picture of him talking or listened to it, but
I did.
It didn't look good.
We also have the we have the sound we can show as well, where James Harden. We'll just let him say it and go from there.
Daryl Morey is a liar, and I will never be a part of an organization that needs more than this. Let me say that again. Daryl Morey is a liar, and I will never be a part of an organization that he's a part of.
Thank you, man. Morey is a liar. I will never be a part of an organization he is a part of. And yes, if you're watching us at VSiN.com, YouTube TV, you can see the not exactly svelte offseason look that James Harden is going with there, Michael.
No working out. But look, I mean, as an executive, what's on my mind really isn't just this. I mean, the Sixers are in checkmate. This is the second player that has come out and basically said he doesn't want to play for the organization. Now, that player, Ben Simmons, had some value. This player, James Harden, doesn't. Because Harden could have opted out and gone to Houston or somewhere else, but Houston said, no, we don't want you. You know, he could have gone to another team, but they didn't want him. They didn't want to pay him. So he had to opt back in. And the discontent here is that he's not going to play. So what's on my mind is we're about a month away from reading that Joel Embiid wants to be traded. That's where we're about. We're about a month away from that because the 76ers are in checkmate. He's not going to play for them, Harden. And if he does, look at the condition that he's in. And so it's not going to lead to anything that's going to resemble a championship. We saw they finished third seeding last year. I feel bad for Nick Nurse, the new head coach, but he walked into a depth trap. I mean, the 76ers have one move to make. They really have one move to make. They either get rid of Morey and believe what Harden says, or they're just going to grin and bear it. They have no first-round picks, right? They have nothing really to stand on the table for, and Embiid's going to not want to stand around for this. So if you can look past the obvious of today and focusing on what Harden said, play it forward, Ben. And now we're just a month away from Embiid saying, I want out.
I completely understand it. I mean, it would make a lot of sense considering there have been a lot of rumblings just in the past where there are connections that Joel Embiid has to, say, New York, and where the Knicks are in a position where they've been waiting to make the big splash for some time. And it's not just some unknown thing. Like, it is very much out there that New York has had their eyes on Joel Embiid for the kind of waiting for this to sort of blow up, and it seems like that is happening
right
now.
It's going to. But look, Derek Bodner, the former beat writer for The Athletic of the 76ers, he started his own website once The Athletics got rid of all the local writers, and he's covered the 76ers for a while, and he put out a tweet today. Stephanie, you could throw that up there too.
Great tweet.
That was great. Well, I mean, he missed some of it too here, right? He missed some of it in here too, right? He, you know, He missed the fact that we traded Mikal Bridges for a first round pick and Zaire Smith. We missed that, but this is really kind of interesting. You know, traded away all-star point guard Drew Holiday to tank, right? Drafted two players who didn't play. And this is all comes down to these idiots that think the process worked, right? They think it worked. Well, it works only like it does in Oklahoma if you can evaluate talent. It takes talent to evaluate talent. When you do stupid stuff like this, it's unfair to say the process worked. It didn't work because they couldn't pick the right players. You know, they brought in Markelle Fultz for a workout. They all said, oh, my God, he's not very good. Oh, my God. We picked him anyway. Traded a first-round pick to get him. Like, you can't – this encapsulates just a little bit of the incompetence that goes on. If you're Josh Harris or you're a Washington football fan, like, what is he going to do? How does he get out of this mess that he's put himself into? I think he has one choice. Either he's going to allow Morey to trade Embiid when Embiid says, I've had enough, or he's going to have to get rid of Morey.
It's just amazing to kind of read through that tweet, too, from Derek Bodner. Because it's what I like how he set this up was he didn't even list any names. It kind of gives you that, like when you read this and then you kind of apply the context, you go, wow, it is just that stark. Going back from basically one thing a year from 2013 all the way through 2023, the latest being the demand of a trade by James Harden.
When that ball bounced up three times and went down, they were so in perfect shape. At that moment, they were in unbelievable shape in spite of the Fultz pick. They were in unbelievable shape in terms of cap room and flexibility. And they just made really bad choices. They took Tobias Harris they took Ben Simmons over Jimmy Butler. Even though they watched Jimmy Butler run the team from the point guard position, they watched him run it and lead them almost to beat Toronto. They watched how Butler and Embiid meshed, but they said, no, we're going to have to kiss Ben's butt because Ben's too good. So they got rid of Butler. Everybody thinks they got rid of Butler because of Tobias Harris. They got rid of Butler because Simmons didn't want him around. And then they trade Simmons. Like, you can't make this up. Like, this is the perfect documentary for how do I destroy a franchise.
My greatest regret probably in any amount of just interaction with sports figures was when I was behind Sam Hinkie in the cab line at NBA Summer League leaving the Thomas and Mack Center about 6 years ago. There was a huge van that pulls up, one of those taxi vans, Michael. Sam Hinkie's all by himself. I should have just hopped in the van. Many questions. I just wanted to ask him about everything, the guy who orchestrated the process, Sam Hinkie in Philadelphia. I didn't. It's one of my great regrets in life, and now I'm left.
He gets a pass because he wasn't there for completion, but he traded the 21-year-old point guard to tank. He drafted two players that wouldn't play. You know, he drafted their third straight center. You know, he hired, and then they were forced to hire advisor's son to run the team, Brian Colangelo. And then he went off on Twitter because Hinkie was getting all this love from the Philly people that love the process. But if you just look at what Hinkie did when he was there in terms of the selection of players, it was horrendous.
Yeah. The other part of this, too, I just had to laugh as well. And by the way, Sixers are set at, you can bet this right now. I mean, NBA win totals have been out for some time. 49.5 is the win total.
Oh, you got to go under. This is going to be. He's not coming. I mean, I mean, Harden doesn't need the money. He's not coming. And like they're in a trap. They're in a complete trap. There's no way he's coming to camp. They're in the same boat they were in when Ben Simmons wouldn't come.
And the issue for Books, we saw this happen play out in Brooklyn with Kevin Durant and his eventual exit, is that. Books can't really just as long as the guy's on the roster, it's really hard for Books to just presume. Cause there's a lot of liability if the alternative were to happen and if somehow things were to work out where all of a sudden if you drop that number too much, now you're going to have a ton of over liability where you still have the stars intact. So they're kind of in that middle ground, no win position as a book. And so if you're better and you feel you have conviction about this and everything we've seen and read and heard does not give us much of an inkling that James Harden would be with the team. So, team that won 54 games and has a ton of off-the-court issues going on right now, 49.5. You're only talking about a 4.5 win difference from there right now. I just find that really interesting. And it's one of the rare spots where the Bucks are kind of handcuffed.
Even if he comes in, look at him. I mean, just look at that picture. Here we are in the middle of August. They're going to start camp in September. Does he look like he's ready to play? We know his skill set was declining. There's only see. Here's why I think you have to believe what Harden said. I think Harden went to them. I think they went to Harden last year and said, "Look, you take less. We'll extend you next year. You opt out. We'll give you 3 years when you opt out, and we'll fully guarantee it." Right. And so they were able to get PJ Tucker in, PJ Walker in. They were able to get, you know, some other players. And then when it came time to do that deal, right? When it came time to do that deal, I think somebody in the building said, "There's no way we're paying Harden that. He's not any good anymore."
And when it's a 2-year, $68+ million deal, like what team right now, given everything we've watched, is in a position to say, "You know what? That sounds like a great idea to take
they
on
can't trade
another
him.
Year." I mean,
Maury's in checkmate. That's why Josh Harris has a decision to make. Now, if he fires Maury, does that mean Harden comes back and they can get him in shape? We'll see. But they're in checkmate. And they're only going to add more to checkmate when Embiid requests a trade in a month.
And I'm glad that was what was on your mind, because that is really the bigger fallout. Because whatever you want to say,
yeah.
James Harden's about to is in his age 34 season, and there are a lot more question marks there than Joel Embiid. For all the health concerns, has still been just an elite center in the NBA now for some time, and that is a guy you want to build a team around, and that could certainly be a path going forward where Embiid. Wants out. I don't think that's hyperbole whatsoever. Could easily see that being the case here in a little bit of time. We'll also finish up with, I cannot wait to see this. Lombardi's List, the 5 worst Sixers trades of all time. We'll do that to close the show in a little bit. Up next, though, we continue with Michael's full season NFL division predictions. We're doing the AFC today. We'll talk AFC South, AFC West when we come back here on the Lombardi Line.
VSiN, the sports betting network. If you want some help betting golf, then VSiN has the perfect podcast for you. It's called Long Shots. Each week, Wes Reynolds, Kelly Bidlin, and myself give you 2 episodes breaking down every aspect of that week's tournament to help you as a golf bettor. We analyze the courses, run statistical models, and give our thoughts on all the top players. We also give out our favorite bets for outright winners, matchups, props, finishing positions, and more. Subscribe to VSiN's Long Shots wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Throughout the NFL preseason, the VSiN experts are busy evaluating every team to give you the betting edge. Our updated NFL betting guide is due out later this month and will help you get ahead of the upcoming NFL season with picks from every single on-air host, team-specific preseason analysis, how to use VSiN betting splits, and football contest strategies. You can become a VSiN Pro subscriber today for as low as $19 and reserve your copy of the guide, or take advantage of our football season special and get access to everything we do through the Super Bowl for only $199. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Speaking of those guides, which that $199 deal includes the college football guide, Aaron Moore, outstanding writer for us at VSiN.com, college football focus for Aaron. He's going to join us in about 15 minutes. Right now, though, Michael, we go back into your playoff predictions. We're talking just division winners today. We're doing the AFC today. We'll do the NFC as well as some wild card teams tomorrow. So I want to go into the AFC South first and foremost with you. We open the show talking the Colts with Anthony Richardson being named the week one starter. I don't think even the most gung-ho Colt fan, Elliot Bowman, I know we'll have as our producer this weekend. Even he is probably not pulling the trigger at 5.5-1.
He wanted it, though. I mean, he wanted it. All Colt fans want this. This is what they want. They don't want to watch Gardner Minshew. So they got what they wanted. Now we'll see if they can. You know what? It's going to be ugly. It's going to be like, you know, it's like the first draft of anything you write. It's not going to be very good until you get in there and fix it and change, move things around and do a lot of different things. It's not going to be pretty, but you know, it is what it is. But for me, as we talk about this, I mean, this opens the door for Jacksonville. You know, you're going to play against two rookie quarterbacks, Stroud twice and Richardson twice. Okay. And Jacksonville looks like they're really good on offense. I think Calvin Ridley's really good. I think Tennessee has a chance to be really good, too. I think Tennessee's defense and the way Vrabel coaches. I went ahead and took Tennessee at +325 to win the division because I thought it was the best value. I was impressed with Jacksonville against Philadelphia, against Dallas in the first preseason game just because their temperament, their attitude, and their execution. I know Lawrence threw an interception on the first pass, but you know that stuff happens. But this Tennessee team, to me, has got that DNA of Vrabel. And they can run the football. You know, I think that they're going to be better in the offensive line, which is critical for them, right? I think you could definitely see they're going to have a better opportunity to protect the quarterback. I don't think Tannehill's horrible. And I love the little kid that they drafted, Spears, from Tulane. I thought he was sensational last week.
No doubt. And I look at this clearly opening up to be a two-horse race so far. If you look at our guide and basically anybody else, it's pretty much, do you lay $1.55 with Jacksonville after going worse the first of season ago, given where they are at, seemingly they are the rightful favorite coming in, or do you view like that as just too much of a tax to pay? Do you go with Tennessee as the second choice? You know, I look at this starting the year just with, you know, preseason ratings. I have Jacksonville about 3 points better than Tennessee on a neutral, which is certainly not overwhelming by any means. So I totally get, Michael, why you'd want to take a stab there at the plus 325. And kind of similar to what we talked about in the AFC East, where all four teams have big question marks at offensive line. I just wonder, so for Jacksonville, you look at the numbers last year, tied for seventh in yards per play offensively, eighth in yards per drive offensively, in large part because quarterback Trevor Lawrence put up borderline top 10 numbers last year. But the O-line was really, really weak in run block separation, third worst in the league. We're bottom half in the league, 19th in a pressure rate allowed on the passing side. And so when you think about bringing in a rookie in Anton Harrison, projected to start at right tackle, outside of Cam Robinson at left tackle, who has been objectively very, very good for Jacksonville, I look at that as still being a huge question mark for an O-line that very well might continue to cause havoc on that team. And I just wonder how much longer will Doug Peterson, how effectively will he be able to scheme around some of those limitations as good as it worked in 2022? I think that's a natural concern to have for the Jags here.
Oh, I'm like, to me, Jacksonville's a little bit like Detroit. I'm not ready to go all in. I mean, if we go back to it, right? You know, let's go back to week 17 or week 18. I get confused what weeks they are now. You know, I mean, Jacksonville's sitting there playing Joshua Dobbs for Tennessee, and they're struggling to win that game, right? I mean, they're having a hard time. And, you know, it's a 17-10 game, and Josh Allen gets the strip sacks on Dobbs and wins the game. And then they get really far behind to the Los Angeles Chargers, and then all of a sudden there's this great comeback that comes in. So, like, I see deficiencies in Jacksonville's game. And look, we know this, you know, one of the things that they have to do is improve the offensive line. And with Robinson being suspended and out, you know, and they're going to have to figure out Taylor goes to Kansas City. You know, they got Walker Little, who started for him last year. Now he's going to have to become their best tackle until Robinson comes back. I think that's hard. Is Harrison ready to be the starter? I don't know yet. And any injury, I think if they lose ATN, I know they drafted Tanks Bigsby in the third round from Auburn, but if any injury to ATN, I think could be really problematic for him.
Sure, and I just wonder, especially in the year-to-year, up-and-down, ebb-and-flow nature of the NFL, when you go from worst to first in a division like Jacksonville, win 9 games a season ago, like how much higher, given the lack of real personnel additions outside of what we talked about in wide receiver yeah. Calvin Ridley, like how much higher could you really anticipate it? And bettors are betting like they already know Jacksonville is winning at least 10, if not 11 or 12. I've heard a lot of buzz about the Jaguars being, you know, sort of a sexy number one seed pick because of the weak division, that they could get right to 13 potentially. And so you mentioned with Cam Robinson at left tackle, the 4-game suspension for violating the league's performance enhancing drug policy. Like how much more can you really gain? You can still be a good football team and go 9-8 if you're Jacksonville and potentially yeah. still win the division, but it seems like it's gotten a little bit out of hand.
I don't sure how good they are on defense, right? Are we sure they're really good on defense? I'm not sure of that, right? You know, they were 16th in sack percentage. You know, I mean, they were not, you know, they were not great in terms of when you look at average drives. They were 30th in league in plays allowed, you know, 25th in the league in time of possession by the offense, and 26th in the league in drives, in yards per drive. How good are they? They were 24th overall in the league in yards allowed anyway. Now, they were only 12th in pass in points allowed, but still, are you convinced they're great on third down? I mean, third down defense last year, Ben, they were 29th in the league.
Sure. And when you go from, you have all those defensive numbers you laid out, and then you think, okay, how were they able to just bend but not break all season? Well, when you're top 7 in the league in turnover margin, that's a pretty easy example of that. And the Jaguars, you look at how those numbers yeah. turnover-wise, it tends to be very volatile year to year. And so, you know, Tyson Campbell as a corner did have market improvements in his second season, but I look at the rest of that unit and I go, I mean, that's a bottom 6, bottom 7 grouping in the league. You think about Darius Williams, Trey Herndon, Andre Sisco, Rayshon Jenkins. You're just projecting, you have to assume if you really like Jacksonville to make a run this year, that they're going to get from at least one or two of those guys major, major leaps, which is always kind of hard to just assume.
I think what you're assuming, too, is Travion Walker is going to be the number one pick overall in the draft, right? We saw Devin Lloyd, their other first-round pick last year, get benched and come back. I mean, they moved a lot of pieces around last year. Now, I can't say his name, but Olakun, the linebacker, I think that's how you say it, is, you know, he's a tackling machine. That guy makes 1,000 tackles. But they need pass rushers to really come through. They need Josh Allen, who was good last year, and they need Travion Walker to be that dominant edge guy. Now, we saw, what did they do? They brought in Clowney. What does that tell us? How does Clowney play on the edge on sub situations with Allen? Like, where's Walker play?
That is a good question, because when we're going to have to find out how that
works. They haven't signed him yet, but where does he play? Like, that's telling you something without telling anything.
Sure, and especially when you're having to lay $1.55 season-long to make that bet. It's why I think it's only natural to be a little bit hesitant as a bettor. The team, Michael, that is the heaviest favorite to win a specific division, -165, the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC West. Are you in line with where the market is at here as far as that divisional champ?
Yeah, I can't imagine. Look, I don't think they'll have – one thing about Andy Reid, he's pretty – you know, he repeats his program. And as long as they've got Mahomes, I think they'll be good. He's tried to improve the offensive line with Sion and Taylor. How good Donovan Smith will be, he wasn't very good last year for Tampa Bay. We'll see. I think the question mark is defensively. You know, are they going to be able to get the pressure that they need to get from the edges? We know Chris Jones – you know, 15 and a half sacks. He'll eventually be there. 40-some hits on the quarterback. Just remarkable, right? Had a great season. Nick Bolton's one of the best players on defense. But, again, you know, this team relies so much on Mahomes to do it. Tony's already hurt. You know, Rashid Rice, is he going to be good enough? Is Watson going to – I mean, there's some question marks in their offensive skill position.
No doubt. And
I don't know how you go against them. I really don't.
I feel the same way, and it's like, can Charles Omenihu, if he takes a leap, a guy who struggled staying on the field, can that be somebody that on the defensive line opposite Chris Jones and maybe a, you know, an upgrade from Frank Clark potentially at edge defender? That could be a possibility, but you know, reality is with what – I mean, Andy Reid and the Kansas City Chiefs had a top five hardest schedule last year. A lot of people thought it would be a big comeback down to earth, and they smashed all those expectations to win the Super Bowl. Similarly tough schedule this year, but when we've seen them do it, they've been able to manage that schedule really well. I see no reason to believe that even at a really expensive price at $1.65, the Chiefs are not going to be the right side, right team to come out of that division.
I mean, they win close games. That's what they do. They find – last year there was a lot of games that could have gone the other – they find a way, because they're great, to win those close games.
Helps when you have the best quarterback in the league, in Patrick Mahomes, too, assisting you in that role. We're going to transition, talk a little college football. Aaron Moore, VSiN.com writer, joins us, give his thoughts on the national scene with Georgia, and then we'll dive into the Sun Belt Conference. That's next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com to check the current betting splits data. Want to know where the money and bets are moving every game? The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 10 minutes. You can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not only today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits are another way VSiN is here to make you a smarter, better year-round. Check out today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. Big shout-out today to our producer, Steph. We got Nick, Mikhail, JB, Andre, Rob, Troy, whole crew here at the Circus Sportsbook Studio, downtown Las Vegas. A pleasure to be in all week for Stormy and Femi. Brand new episode, by the way, the GM Shuffle, up now. I was really enjoying the Twitter banter this week between you and Femi, getting all excited about...
Oh, my God. Twitter Femi is the best.
I love Twitter Femi.
There's nothing... I don't know where he lives. It's the Batcave. When he drives into that Batcave and becomes Twitter Femi, goes down the pole, you know, and he got his uniform, and he's Twitter Femi. You know, on the podcast, he defends everybody. He's the greatest defense attorney in the... He'll defend anybody. Now, he would not take the Trey Lance case on. Now, there's a lot of people that will take the trade. Yeah. Still take the trade. I mean, Ben, can you imagine Trey Lance is 50-1 to win the MVP still?
That's kind of amazing. We're going to dive into that tomorrow because there were some interesting comments from earlier today. We're going to talk about all I know is the only thing better than Twitter Femi is Las Vegas pool party, Femi, which I've had an opportunity to witness. So that's all I'm going to say. Great guy to be around at the old Vegas pool party. All right, now let's get to Aaron Moore, VSiN.com writer, also sports media professor who joins us. Done an outstanding job, especially breaking down all things college football in our guide as well as online. Aaron joins us right now. We're going to talk some Sun Belt specifically today with you, Aaron. It's a great smaller conference to try to break down and extract some value from. Before we get there, though, Georgia just named not a unanimous but nearly unanimous number one AP preseason poll team, trying to do what only Minnesota back in the mid-1930s has done, go back to back to back. Now, where do you stand on Georgia just overall coming in at just over 2-1 here to win the Natty?
Well, thanks for having me, Ben. Looking at it from Georgia, you never want to say there are sure things, right? That's why it's a betting network. That's why we talk both sides. But if you're looking at Georgia, you're looking at their futures. You can get them national championship plus 200 or so. It's just hard for them not to get to that playoff game, those final four teams. And looking at all the options you can make betting-wise or taking them at that 2-1, boy, I think you got them in the national championship game. And once they're there in December or so, January, you're going to be really happy right now you got that 2-1 ticket, because they really do look like they have the track to that final four.
Aaron, is there a team in that, you know, I know LSU's a popular pick. I'm uncertain about Tennessee because of Milton. The quarterbacking market kind of makes me wonder, although Tennessee returns so many guys defensively, is there any team down there, Penn State, Tennessee, that you think's worth some pizza money to play as a potential national champion?
I think from a pizza money standpoint, Michael, look at what happened last year with getting a team in from the Big 12 to go to the championship. You're always looking at a Big 10 team. You're always looking at an SEC team. So the Big 12 got their foot in the door. And I think just from a pizza money standpoint, you can get Texas in that 20-1 range. It's not necessarily a bet I want to make, but I do think you look at precedent and what happened last year with the Big 12, then what you have with Texas is certainly an option to consider at 20-1.
No doubt. That is Aaron Moore joins us right now. Follow him at Pub Relation Prof. As we're now going to talk some Sun Belt. It's a fascinating conference just in the midst of general conference realignment. And so the Sun Belt hasn't been hit as hard as some of these other leagues. You talk about, you know, the Conference USA, bunch of teams going to the AAC and a number of other schools as well. South Alabama, the Jaguars favored to win the Sun Belt, but this is viewed to be a really, really tight race. You have five teams, 7.5-1 or shorter here, with the Troy Trojans second on the odds board at just over 3-1. Both of those two teams I mentioned in the West Division. Coastal Carolina, with quarterback Grayson McCall back, even though they lost head coach Jamie Chadwell to Liberty, are the favorites to win the East Division at plus 165 and 5-1 overall. What's your approach as we start on that East Division here, where you have the best quarterback pretty much unanimously in the conference in McCall, but what do you expect out of the Chanticleers now that it is a new head coach and a generally new look in 2023?
So, Ben, if you look at it, if we're talking about just college football in general, big conferences, power conferences, small conferences, it's very hard to find a better quarterback than Grayson McCall. And I think that's where you have to start this handicap with the Sun Belt, is you get Grayson McCall back. For the last 3 years, when this guy plays, Coastal Carolina wins. He has a 28-4 record over the last 3 years. So I think that's where you start. And yes, they lose their coach Chadwell to Liberty. They get Tim Beck, and we're expecting them not to be as much of an open offense as they were the last couple years, but more of a possession, kind of take some time off the clock. And I still think that will help McCall, because you have, as I said, really one of the best quarterbacks in the country. And I think if we're looking at it from a future standpoint right now, betting that if you can get Coastal Carolina to win that East Division, because it's so heavier in the West, that you can get Coastal at plus 165 to win the East. That was one of my favorite bets that I've made in the Sun Belt, because the Sun Belt in general is good up top, good in the middle, and on the East, you really have Coastal, App State, and perhaps Marshall into the conversation. But I really think it's a good opportunity to focus on what is so important in college football, and that's a great quarterback in McCall.
You know, when I look at these smaller conferences, everybody focuses on the good. I think the book sometimes can't quite get how bad is, right? So let's talk about Terry Bowden's Warhawks, the University of Louisiana Monroe. You know, their projection win total is 3.5. Now, I don't know if you can get any worse than they were last year. What were they? I think they were like 100th in offense in ranking, 124th defense. I mean, they were bad, 85th per play. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you see any chance to not take the under 3.5 win total?
So if you're going to look at it, and I love it, Michael, we look at a conference, we talk so much at the top, but let's go for the stink. Let's go to the bottom and see where it's there, because there's not a lot of attention. And the books make those lines, and they don't really have to move them that much at the bottom because so much public attention goes to the top. So Louisiana Monroe, 3.5 wins, very, very difficult for me to even think they get 4 wins. Definitely look at the bottom. Look at a team like that, 3.5 wins. You can certainly go under. That looks like a good bet.
Only 150-1 for the Fighting Warhawks of Louisiana Monroe to win the Sun Belt this year. 60-1 to win the West, bringing up the rear. And the odds board is Aaron Moore joins us talking a little Fun Belt for 2023. So we look at the West, South Alabama plus 155, Troy plus 160. You can kind of split hairs on as far as the odds board with it being so tight and who you prefer. But if there are bets to make here, if we're talking Western Division specifically in the Sun Belt, as well as some win totals, how would you look to attack that there at the top of the board?
So, Ben, I think it's good way you said splitting hairs. I have both of these teams power ranked the same. They both come in very evenly. So here's a possibility that you can attack that West board with, that you can get USA plus 155, Troy plus 160. An option is to take both of those teams to win the West. It's very likely that the West comes from those two teams. So if you want to lock in a profit, you want to take a more of a conservative approach because these two teams are the two teams in the West, or the two best teams in the West. They rate out a little bit higher than Coastal in the East. You could take those two teams, lock in a profit. Your next team in the West is Louisiana Lafayette. They're 4-1 to win that division. So clearly that these are the top two teams. That's an option. One of the ways I also looked at it with Troy and USA being so equal is how can I play it differently? And you look and you shop and you find different win totals, and particularly at DraftKings, you can find conference win totals, and you can get Troy at 5.5 conference wins. Now, it's minus 175 to take the over. That's obviously a lot of juice, but you can get that 5.5 wins. I feel very, very comfortable taking the over on that when you can see other books have them at 6. So the 5.5 conference wins for Troy is the way I'm going because, as you said, Ben, these two teams, Troy, USA, very, very equal, and you got to assume the winner comes out of that Western division.
What do you expect from Butch Davis as he returns to college football at Arkansas State? You know, he's won everywhere except for Tennessee. Well, I know Arkansas State wasn't a good team last year. They returned 11 starters. What do you expect for them this year? Their over total is, what, 4.5?
Yeah, so if you're looking at the Sun Belt, one of the interesting aspects, Michael, is you're talking about Butch Davis coming back. Well, Clay Helton sure did something to resurrect his career last year at Georgia Southern. So you can get Arkansas State at 4.5. That number is pretty consistent across different books. You got to like what they have in Butch Davis, but the problem with that win total and why I didn't take that either way, Michael, is I think that middle to lower section of the Sun Belt is very even. Yes, you have the Louisiana Monroe near the bottom, very low, but that middle to bottom aspect of that conference is pretty even. And so now you're looking at it, those 4.5, 5 wins, it's going to be tough for them to get there.
Especially when you think about the non-conference schedule, when you throw it in for all these group of five conferences, can make it really, really tough. Aaron Moore, tremendous insight on the Sun Belt.
Great job, Aaron.
As
Thank
always,
you.
A pleasure having you join us here on the Lombardi Line.
Thank you very much, guys.
Give him a
good
follow
luck.
Thank you, Aaron, at Pub Relation Prof. When we come back, the moment we've been waiting for, Lombardi's List, the 5 worst Sixers trades of all time to close the show.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager with BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like bonus bets, and Bet Insurance tokens. Planning a trip to Vegas? You can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. Sign up with BetMGM or log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 7 days of issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Again, a big thanks to Aaron Moore for joining us here on the network. He also likes Southern Miss under 5 wins as well. So always great to get that insight on some of the smaller conferences, Michael, as we're back for the final time. Little pro tip for the show to give you. We talked about this earlier. Just make sure you're exercising caution when you blindly follow some preseason line moves. In week one, if you did that, and I just kind of tracked this manually, Michael, 14 of the 16 games had moves of at least 2 points. And if you just blindly chase those, you only went 6-8. So it's not just some, there's sometimes I think a narrative that is, oh yeah, NFL preseason, super easy to bet. You just have to know who's in, who's out. It's really not that simple. So
no.
Exercise caution.
Look, remember the Saint game? I mean, everybody, because Mahomes was starting, that line moved well in favor of the Chiefs. You know, that moved away from the Chiefs and to the Saints, and the Saints ended up winning the game and playing well. So, yeah, be really careful. Yep. I mean, be really careful. I think you have to be really careful, too, when the teams practiced against one another, because now you just don't know what's going to happen in the game, because a lot of the teams will get their veterans to work during the week. So you have to be careful there, too.
Sure. 2 games already for week two, and these lines were just released yesterday at about noon Eastern that have moved 3 points. Eagles from 1 to 4-point favorites. There has been some buyback. You can find 3.5, but that's been a big mover past a key number in the Eagles-Browns game Thursday. And then the Jets opened a 1-point dog at home against the Bucks. That's already moved to 2. And even though, you know, passing through 0 isn't as big of a deal, keep in mind, coaches don't want to go to overtime, Michael. So we've seen a lot more games in the preseason land on 1, where coaches just, you get a late score and they just go for 2. They either want to win by 1, or they're fine taking the loss. They just do not want to go to OT. So consider that. As a result, we also have one other thing to get to, Michael, before we get into Lombardi's list, which is the 5 worst 76ers trades of all time. Really quick, though, one of our loyal viewers, Scott Barranco, he's always so kind, tunes in basically every day here to the Lombardi Line. He had asked me earlier in the show, he was listening, I believe this was on Adam Chernoff's podcast, which he does an outstanding job of, the Simple Handicap. Adam's been a frequent VSiN guest here, usually on Follow the Money throughout the NFL season. So he says Frank Reich, head coach in Carolina, and his offensive coordinator Thomas Brown, who was brought over tight ends coach at the Rams last year, are apparently not getting along. He wants your thoughts. Anything you've heard about that within the room of the Carolina Panthers?
Well, I think there's got to be some. I'm sure his offensive line coach, Campen's not getting along either. I mean, that offensive line was good. There's something going on down there. And, you know, I would say where there's a little bit of smoke, there's got to be some fire, because Frank Reich's team looked lethargic. They looked horrible. They looked poorly coached. Thomas Brown's going to be the guy that everybody points to as the one who's responsible for this, when in fact it might be Reich who's calling the plays. Look, Reich's 0-4-1 in opening games. We know this. He does a horrible job of getting his team ready. And what was supposed to be his saving grace was he was a tough guy. And the longer things went in Indianapolis, the less toughness that team had. So I would be worried as a Panther. I mean, I thought the Panthers could win the South. I'm going to give it more time. But that outing there was poorly coached. That was an embarrassing tape for the Panthers.
No question. And when I went through just looking at kind of the positional rankings for every team, like I looked at Carolina and kind of felt like, remember, that was an offensive line that was projected bottom five last year and really impressed. Went way over expectation. And I look at where Carolina's at coming into this year, and you think about some of the defensive losses they have. Like, you could have made a case coming in that Carolina's strength was actually at offensive line, and that certainly doesn't look to be the case. Again, I don't want to overreact to one preseason game, but they looked awful, and that is putting it kindly in week one.
I think what the thing we have to say is they looked really unprepared. That is what it bothers you the most. When you're unprepared and your players don't play with a lot of intensity, Bryce Young's first home game in front of the fans, there was no zip to their team. It was really, and so, look, if I were Jeff Tepper and I fired Matt Rhule and it didn't hire Steve Wilks, who almost got me in the playoffs for this, I would be upset. Like, I don't know why people aren't saying, wait a minute, you hired Frank Wright and you didn't hire the guy that almost got you to the playoffs? Like, to me, that was an injustice to begin with.
Yeah, no doubt. And the way that game played out. I mean, Carolina barely had 100 yards, you know, going into the final drive and got shut out against the Jets. So whether it was Matt Corral or, or Bryce Young at quarterback, not a good start. But again, one preseason game. We'll see how the Panthers look here in the coming weeks still in the preseason. All right, final 5 minutes of the show, Michael. I've been waiting for this all day. Lombardi's list. Yeah. Today, the five worst 76ers trades of all.
Well, we got to put them in categories now. Yep. So there's so much meat on this bone here now as a 76er fan that, you know, this is just trade player for player. This isn't moving up in the draft. This isn't taking Larry Hughes over Paul Pierce. This isn't, we're not going there, right? We're not going in the trading for draft picks. This is just player for player. We'll start off with one of my favorite 76ers of all time, Chet the Jet Walker. Hall of Famer, was really good for the Sixers. They trade him for Jim Washington and Bob Kaufman. Nobody knows who those two guys are. Needless to say, Jim Washington was supposed to be the star of the deal. It never worked out. Chet the Jet went on to have a great career at the Chicago Bulls. I actually started my love affair with Chet the Jet Walker. I thought he was great. He was a forward, could shoot the baseline jumper. Loved him. Number four. This one's a doozy. This one's a complete doozy.
This is the one, Michael, when this gives me the most, even not even having any ties to the Sixers, I get the most PTSD just when I see the name Andrew Bynum.
But it's only the fourth worst trade. I mean, there's worse than this one. They trade for Andrew Bynum. They give up Iguodala, Nico Vukovic, who Doug Collins said was too soft, their first-round pick, Mo Harkless, who's still playing around the league, and a lot of draft picks. And I'm going to go out on the limb and guess this. How many games do you think Bynum played?
It was not many.
It was zero. That's the answer.
Digits.
The correct answer is zero. He never played.
Yep.
Right? That was like that. How about that? Okay. I'm in Capri, Italy. Millie and I are on vacation. And there's this whole movement. Harold Katz wants to trade Barkley. Right? And it happens. It happens. I finally, somehow I get word. There's no cell phones. This is where it was. I had to go to a payphone and call an agent friend of mine to find out the details of the trade. We trade Charles Barkley. Think about this. For Jeff Hornacek, Andrew Perry, Tim Perry, and Andrew Lang. And no draft picks. Got no draft picks.
Yeesh.
Okay?
Yeah.
How about that deal? Barkley only took the Suns to the finals, right? Lost to Jordan. But no big deal. I'm okay. I got one more for you. How about Moses Malone, the guy who won a championship? We traded for Jeff Rulin, who had a bad knee, and Cliff Robinson. Malone went on to win three more went to the All-Star game three more times. Now, he wasn't the same player, but Rulin couldn't play. Rulin had bone on bone with the knee. Like, who's doing this stuff, right? Like, who's making these trades? It's amateur hour in this building. You wonder why I'm a depressed fan? Now, the number one is we trade Wilt Chamberlain. Mm-hmm. First of all, if you're trading Wilt Chamberlain for Darrell Imhoff, Chambers, and Archie Clark, you're insane. Now, I know he wanted to go out and play there, but this is one of the greatest basketball players of all time. Darrell Imhoff? Think about this.
It's stupefying. Like, how many people do you think now would look at Imhoff, Chambers, Clark would even be able to name the first names of all of any of those three? Like,
Look, Bynum for Iguodala, Vucevic, and Harkless in draft picks should be the signature worst trade of any organization, and it's only fourth in Philadelphia 76er lore.
Yeah, it's amazing when you put those into context, because like as a previously long-suffering Milwaukee Bucks fan, not anymore, not thanks to Giannis Antetokounmpo, like there were some bad deals, but a lot of that was just due to small market, not willing to spend, and all that. And yet, I look at your list, and it kind of blows. Even the sad state of the Bucks until about 5 years ago blows that out of the
water. And so we get it in perspective now. This is just trade player for player. This isn't, you know, we didn't pick this guy or we didn't pick that guy. That's draft mistakes. Or we traded up for. I didn't put this, so this didn't qualify because it was for draft pick. We traded the first pick overall in the draft for Roy Hinson from Rutgers with the Cleveland Cavaliers. You don't remember this, right? And the Cavs picked Brad Daugherty.
Pretty good.
I mean, like, Cavs you Hall can't make this up.
Yeah.
That didn't make the list because it's in a different category.
Right. Oh yeah, my the ones for me, as a Buck fan, the Ray Allen trade to Seattle for 3 months of Gary Payton and Rashard Lewis. That is always going to – I still remember where I was when that happened. I was a little kid. I wanted to cry.
Well, every team – we all make bad trades. Yeah, you know, this is a laundry list like when you're going on summer vacation. It's so long. I mean, this is so long. I could have added more.
Just get it all out. This is therapeutic. Summer activity provides.
Nah, it's the best. Thanks, Stephanie.
It was great. Great to be back with you, Michael. I'll see you tomorrow. We have plenty more headlines still to get to in the NFL. I will also do our NFC preseason predictions. That's tomorrow on the Lombardi Line.